All right.
Awesome. Okay. So if you guys want to turn to page 146, do you have any questions from last week at all?
I do have a question. I don't know if it's last week or if I wrote it because I was listening to an old recording.
Sure.
What the Baddha Kesha is, but I don't know if we're... I can't find it in the book right now. But it was just the obstacle causing planet, and so I was just... I think it's definitely this chapter, but... Yeah, that's my question.
So okay, so Baddha Kesha is actually something we cover in depth in the second level. I'm not sure. Let me just glance through this chapter really quick. Because I think it's...
I added it in the newest version. It's not the old version.
Oh, I see. It's on page 154. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when Freedom and I had done this class... When I was the student in this class, we had just sort of glanced over it and was like, let's talk about it later. But we can talk about it now, right, Freedom?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. So page 154. It's actually a really interesting subject. So the Baddha Kesh, Baddha Kastana is the house that's causing... That's obstacle causing. And the Baddha Kesha is the lord of that house. So the general principles are outlined in that chart on page 154, where it says Chara, Stira, and then Dvishvabhava. So what the Chara is talking about, or like at the top parts of this chart is talking about, it's whatever the ascendant sign is. So if your ascendant happens to be a chara or movable sign, then we would look down and we would see that the 11th house is going to be the obstacle-causing house. And then the 11th lord is going to be the Baddha Kesha. Does that make sense?
It does. It's because it's Parashva's rule. Is there like a...
Like, why would we use this?
How do you always know that that's the obstacle?
So, it's an interesting thing. What it does is, let me see if he talks about it in this part. So it causes, and here he says it causes blockages, delays, confusions, and other obstacles. So one of the things that it can do is, so let's say like Dvishvabhava, those ascendants, when you're looking and you're seeing that the seventh house is going to be the Baddha Kesha, there can be obstacles because part of the seventh house in this context is regarding sight. So people not being able to see fully what's going on in a situation. Also, all things seventh house can have this sort of like fuzziness or confusion around it. So like, you know, this is sort of a general idea of looking at like tendencies to have issues regarding seventh house stuff. So it depends on the specifics of the chart, but it's more of like a higher functioning thing than something we're going to immediately look at, especially for this level. It's something good to have in the back of the head when you're looking at charts. But, you know, sometimes like the Baddha Kesha, the lord of the Baddha Kastana is conjunct something. And if we're, let's say, that it's conjunct the spine or the sun. So then we could talk about like maybe there are obstacles or issues around the person's spine, that sort of thing. So... and that could be like something that a doctor couldn't really solve very easily. So, you know, like oftentimes if someone keeps going to doctors and they're not getting a proper diagnosis, you can look at the chart and see like maybe there's something related to the Baddha Kesha that's causing this confusion or difficulty around it. Does that help a little more? Give like a bit of context for why we're even, okay, mm-hmm. Cool.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So it's both the house and the lore that creates this fuzziness or obstacle?
Yes, yeah. All right. So on page 146, the Kendras are, so if we're looking at the image here of the North Indian style chart, which has the diamond shape, and in it it says the four aims of life. Those four houses are considered the Kendras, or the corners of the chart, and they're kind of like the four pillars that hold up the chart. So the first one is Dharma, the fourth house is Moksha, seventh is Kama, and then the tenth is Artha. And each house is related, so each of the Kendras basically spearheads or governs those aspects of life. So with it comes houses five and nine from each of those Kendras. So in this case, the house of Dharma being the first house, another house of Dharma would be the fifth house, and then the ninth house. Does that make sense? So you've got like this triangle going on. And then for the Kama houses, we would have house seven. We would also have the fifth house from that, which would be house 11. And then the third house, which would be the ninth house from the seventh. Does that make sense? So in this case, it looks kind of like a V shape that it's making. And then so on and so forth for Moksha and Artha. So why don't I have, Doug, why don't you read the Dharma part?
I'm sorry. Okay. I'd like to ask you a question first.
Sure.
We apply the concept of the ayanas to either or both the grahas and the rashis.
We are applying the concept of the ayanas to the houses.
Only? Okay. We didn't apply them to either of the other two?
Well, we do talk about the Rashis also having a connection to, like, all of the watery planets. All of the Tattvas have particular connections to them. So, like, all of the watery signs or Rashis have connection to Moksha.
Right. Okay, yeah. And the fire signs are Dharma.
Right.
And so forth, yeah. Yeah, I had created a little mnemonic. I was just trying to clarify the DAKM starting with the South Indian style charting going around. So, okay, thanks.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Dharma is defined as the purpose for which an individual has taken birth. A cow has no religion, but it does have a dharma to make milk. So dharma is not religion. It's what the person needs to do for themselves and society to better the world. It's an innate aspect of one's contribution to the world. The dharma of a carpenter is to build houses. The dharma of a writer is to write. And the dharma of a chair is for providing a place to sit. The natural path and purpose of an object or person is seen from the Dharma Kendra and from its trines, 1, 5, and 9. The first house shows the innate self. The fifth house shows intelligence and learning. And the ninth shows respect for elders and the blessings of guru and knowledge.
Great. Thank you. So as we can see here, the first house, which governs the person or the sense of self in the chart, this is when we're looking at the first house, we're looking at the innate sense of the person, a very strong snapshot of who they are. And there are, of course, other things that we are looking at in the chart, but this is what's giving us the sense of the person's dharma. And when we look at house, the fifth house from that, that is giving us the intelligence and the basically the education and upbringing that informs and feeds that personality, because without that input, we wouldn't have any sort of strengthening of Dharma. And the same with the ninth house being the house of teaching, or the guru. You know, the guru should be instructing that self in the ways of their Dharma and how to engage more fully in that, with that. So let's look at, let's see, Caroline, I'll have you do Artha.
Okay. Artha is that which sustains. In Western culture, represented by money, wealth, or acquisition of valuable objects. In ancient times, this could have included bartering items as well. Artha is the human goal to attain a material livelihood and financial security done primarily through work and money. One's artha and dharma may be different. For example, a carpenter who does carpentry during the day may be pursuing artha and in the evenings teaches yoga, practicing his dharma. It is a blessing when one's dharma and artha are the same, and one can actually earn a livelihood through one's dharma. Our work and earning is seen from the Artha Kendra and its trines, 10, 2, and 6. The 10th shows career work, the 2nd shows money saved from that to support oneself, and the 6th shows the hard work and service done.
Great. Any questions on those? Do you understand how the main part of it, for Artha, the main house that we're going to be looking at for someone's Artha would be the 10th house, and then houses 2 and 6 give us further information as to how that relates and how that's functioning in a person's life. So again, Kendras become this very important part of the chart that we're looking at, because in essence, those are the 4 points of the chart that steer the person's life.
So in that the Dharma and Artha can be different, so you can see in the chart that someone may be having to make money one way and then following their Dharma a different way, but is there any way to like make those coexist? Or if it's in the chart, is that kind of, I guess it depends on the level of karma, huh?
That, and also if you see something like the first house lord going into an exchange with the 10th house lord, then you can see that Dharma and Artha have to be interlinked. Or if you see like a conjunction of those two, or a very strong Graha Drishti, then you can see that those are going to be heavily linked, and at particular points in the person's life that will play out as being the same or very compatible.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's see. See what else I want to add. All right, so I'll read the comma part. Kama is basic desire and the human need for love, enjoyment, emotional, and sensory happiness. Kama relates to sexuality, marriage, partnership, children, and the acquisition of the things we desire in life for our own enjoyment. The fulfillment of kama is seen from the Kama Kendra and its trines, 7, 3, and 11. The 7th shows the spouse or the partner. The 11th shows the money one acquires and the things purchased with it. The third house shows games, hobbies, socialization, and all that comes from that. So something else with the 11th house, which I think is discussed on or shown in the chart on the page before, people in the section of people in the 11th house, it represents friends, also networks in general, and sort of people that you can engage with and find, gain pleasure from. You know, just a general sense of enjoyment and conviviality. So that's something we're also looking at with the 11th house.
Sure.
So this might be a silly question, but no matter what, the first house is Dharma, even if it's a water sign, or does it rotate?
The first house is always Dharma, yep. And we can see that there can be nuance within just looking at that basic level of whatever the Rashi is placed in the house. The tattva is going to definitely color what that person's Dharma is, you know, so just because it's the first house represents Dharma, obviously not everybody's Dharma is the same. And so that element of, if it's a water sign, we're going to see more of a tendency towards things related to moksha, like interest in spirituality, or this like dissolving of barriers, that sort of thing. You know, like think of Pisces in general. So it's the ocean. It's this expansive nature, and one's dharma might be to you know, on very general terms, to expand consciousness beyond, you know, what they were raised in, and sort of see the world as like as family, or as, you know, moving into a place of experiencing larger forms of consciousness, that sort of thing. And then, you know, within that, we're going to look at whatever planets are placed there, because those will give lots of information about the person. And so everything within those houses starts to color what we're looking at. So this, you know, when we're looking at houses, we're looking at areas of life. And then the rest of it will start to fill in more of that information. Does that help at all? Do you want to read the moksha part?
Sure. Moksha is freedom or liberation, and refers to our spirituality and spiritual growth. It includes whatever liberates our inner spirit and sense of being. The moksha houses are 4, 8, and 12. The fourth house relates to the heart and its focus or direction, gati, in life. The eighth house trine is the internal work that one needs to do to grow spiritually. It relates to the kundalini. The 12th house is a time one spends alone or in spiritual practice away from the world.
Any questions on that one? So the houses 8 and 12 also belong to a particular class of houses called the Dustana. And those tend to bring suffering in life. And so when we're looking here and we see that it's the eighth house is the internal work that one needs to do to grow spiritually, it relates to the kundalini. And then the 12th house is the time one spends alone or in spiritual practice away from the world. The eighth house is also a house of death and transformation. And the 12th house is the house of loss. And so they're harsher houses to be looking at. And usually when people go through major spiritual changes in their life, they aren't easy. So that's something to think about, is like there's an element of loss for something greater. So if someone is on a spiritual path and there's a stripping away of the ego that occurs, then usually that's not something that's just taken on for fun. You know, that's something that you have to devote a lot of time and energy and effort to. So like the 12th house being loss, you know, there's an element of kind of adjusting and can be a sense of like losing the lifestyle that you had in order to pursue spirituality, those sorts of things. So when we're looking at that, there's this kind of nuance of like, it's not necessarily all that bad given how someone is engaging with their life and what their practices are. But if someone is forced suddenly into a state of deep spiritual questing, it can manifest outwardly as this very tumultuous experience. So, you know, these are just things to keep in mind when we're looking at those houses.
Are the Marakas different from the Dasthanas?
Yes, the Marakas are houses 2 and 7. And those we'll talk about in level 2. But they have a very different energy. So the Dustanas, which we can look at that now. on page 149. The dustanas are houses of pain, suffering, and sorrow. And so Doug brought up the word marka, and marka is killing. And so those houses have a tendency to pierce the life force of the person and can drain the person of their well-being, and the planets that are in them or the lords of those. This is different, however, in that they give general suffering. So when we're looking at, like the sixth house is the house of enemies and disease. The eighth house is the house of debt, suffering, and death. The 12th house is the house of loss. So planets placed in these indicate some type of suffering. So there are some examples here of like malefics in the sixth will make one a good fighter, but will give them lots of enemies to fight. Benefics in the sixth will make the native prone to not fight, and will make enemies very smart. So there's this whole idea of like, if we look at someone's chart and we see like Jupiter is in the sixth house, Jupiter is not inclined to fight. Jupiter is the guru. He's this generous, jovial person. And in the house of fighting or enemies, we can see like the person is smart and they don't really necessarily want to engage in combat or in harsh words with another person. But the negative side of that is that they might not be able to handle other people, the people that would rise up and argue with them or have conflict with them. So in essence, there's this kind of doormat syndrome that would occur when we're looking at that. Any questions on that? There's a lot to look at this. 12th house here has the shows loss, secret enemies, and expenses. And so, you know, the 12th house also being a house of spirituality and the loss of self or letting go that occurs. But it's also this house of secret enemies and loss, like financial loss through expenses or loss of people. It can also be imprisonment. There's all sorts of stuff, but we're looking at this larger thing. But within the context of dustanas, we have these three houses that are kind of, in general, seen as problematic. So we have like the kendras, which give us the four aspects of life, and then we have these dustanas, which give us a kind of like the problem areas that the person needs to work with or work on. Does that make sense?
Can I just make a kind of, I don't know if it's a question, but just maybe an observation?
Sure.
I just think it's interesting that in the Moksha Kendra, that there's two of the Dusana houses included. Would that be sort of like in the same line as with Saturn, kind of creating like these spiritual warriors, and that like because of your suffering you're sort of forced to change things up, and like if the suffering doesn't cause like complete like ill will and you're able to work through it, you know, then you learn and have to grow more spiritually.
I think that's a good way of looking at it. You know, this idea of moksha as liberation, you know, we have, you know, this great idea of moksha of like what we're all hoping to achieve at some point. And then we have these minor mokshas or things that liberate us from our current state. And part of that is looking at what's difficult and what challenges us to move beyond our current state into something greater. And in this case, when we're looking at it, the ideal would be that a person can deal with, you know, houses 8 and 12, the energies in that place of deep change or deep loss. And in some method, you know, like through non-attachment, be able to learn how loss is something that's natural that happens in the everyday life. And to be able to move through that and not have that be something that is devastating or trauma causing to them. You know, on the other hand, there are people that really struggle with loss or with change that the houses 8 and 12 would bring. And, you know, they can get caught up in places of trauma or deep struggle, you know. Does that help at all?
Yes, yeah. So, like, with that being said, when getting caught up in that, so then that would be, like, a detrimental aspect to the moksha kendra, if they were to be...
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so none of these aspects of life are inherently good or bad. They just are, and it's how we relate to them. You know, so if we have malefics in those houses, then we can see that there can be difficulties that are there, that it, you know, it's not just something that is going to cause change in their life, but it can cause change that can be really hard for them, that sort of thing. So it's really, it's all about perspective and engagement. You know, so this, one of the great things is, like, if we look at the moon, and the moon is the mind, and we see that the moon is in the eighth house, it's, that's not a happy place for it necessarily. What that indicates, though, is those people have changes of perspective constantly because they are engaging in their life in a way that seems tumultuous, you know, things constantly changing, stuff having to start over because there's, you know, there are abrupt endings or whatever, versus, you know, the moon being placed favorably in the first house, or where there's a much stronger sense of self and, like, the perspective tends to stay more the same, that sort of thing. So everything, you know, everything's relative. But yeah, I hope that helps a bit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Let's see. So then we have a section here called Upachaya. And Upachaya means growth, accumulation, or elevation. And these are the third, the sixth, the tenth, and the 11th houses. And these are houses that are said to get better over time. Let's see, what does he say here? The Kriyamana karma, the karma being created in this life comes primarily from these houses. Some say they are houses of free will. Indications of these houses will grow as the person ages. The third house shows how we start a communication and what, or how we get what we want. The sixth house shows how we handle things when we don't get what we want. The third house is the first response, and the sixth house is the second response. Benefics in the third and sixth make a person soft and gentle, while malefics make a person more aggressive and able to defend their viewpoint. The 10th and 11th show the work we do and what we get for it. So the 11th being income, as coming in, and the 10th house showing the work. And so something to point out, the 11th house is the second from the 10th, which is the, like, if we look at the first house and the second house is our savings and what we have for ourselves. And this is the 10th house and the 11th house. The 11th house shows sort of the same pattern for it being the second from the 10th. Does that make sense? This, like, level of income versus second house being savings. So it's income being something that is much more flexible, and savings being something that is a sort of a longer term thing. So anyway, 10th and 11th house show the work that we do and what we get for it. The work you choose to do can either better yourself and the world or not. What you choose to gain from that work, how you spend the money earned and the energy put forth into acquiring material gain for pleasure will change your future for better or for worse. And something in general to look at is oftentimes if we're seeing a positive projection in someone's life, you know, the first job that you had when you, you know, in high school or in college probably wasn't the best job or the most enjoyable or easy job that you had. And over time, people usually find better jobs that are more suited to who they are or to the fields that they're in, you know, if there's not anything in there that's malefic or causing problems within the chart. But that's in the sense, I think it's sort of easy to look at the third and the sixth houses. Communication gets easier over time because we learn how to interact with so many different people, and we learn how to become a little more fluid in our speech and in the ways that we interact. With the 10th and 11th houses, we are looking at how things get better over time, mostly in regards to finance or to arta, to work and kama. So also, like, if we think of like the 11th house being the house of it's a house of kama, and it's related to both income, which ideally should get better over time, but we also have networks and friends. And, friends come and go, but hopefully over time you acquire people that become really precious to you and that you have as a solid network to support who you are. So that's another way of looking at these upachaya houses as things that get better over time. And so when we see stuff like Saturn in the 11th house, which can give difficulties in maybe having fewer friends or struggles with income. Those sorts of struggles should get easier over time unless there's something else that is causing greater issue. But that's just a way to understand this upachaya. Any questions on that?
No, but I do have a question just kind of generally around if there's no planets in the house, like what's going on there? How do we, I mean, there's obviously a sign there. So you just take the Lord of that sign and
apply. Yeah, the Lord of the sign, we start to look at that. We also look at, I believe on the page 156, there's this whole concept of Bhava Karaka. So we had Nisargika Karaka earlier in this book in the class where we're talking about natural significators. Well, the houses also have their own significators. So say like the moon being related to the fourth house is the house of home, the mother, that sort of thing. Venus is also a significator for the fourth house, and that's the house of, or that's the karaka for vehicles or luxury that a person has. So we can look at not only the house itself and any aspects that are going to the house. We also can look at the house lord, and we can also look at the karaka, the bhava karaka, or the significator for the house. So we have, typically we have three things that we're able to look at. Everybody has something going on that will indicate the sense of self in the first house. You know, if they have no planets in there, we can still look at the lord of that house and what it's interacting with, any aspects to it or what else it's aspecting, that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, so page 150. This is one of the fun parts where we actually get to see more of the significators and understand a little more, kind of broaden our palette of what these houses hold for us and what we can look at with them. I think we'll take turns just reading over this part. Let's start with Doug. Do you want to read the first and second house?
Sure. First house, Lagna Bhava, signifies the body, appearance and form, the intellect, the complexion, strengths and weaknesses, happiness and sorrow, and our innate nature.
Great. And the second house?
The second house, the place of wealth, signifies wealth and riches, gains and food. Something like weight gain. family, death and longevity, friends, metals, precious stones, and all things of monetary value.
Great, thank you. Sarah, would you read houses, or the third and fourth house?
Yep. The third house, the house of bad, foolish thoughts. Courage, strength, power, heroism, intensity, servants, attendants, support, siblings, teaching of the guru or knowledge coming from hearing the guru, short journeys, march or a walk, and parents' death.
Great.
And the fourth house relates to vehicles, relatives, kindred spirits, I guess, friends, mother, happiness, welfare, comfort, purity, treasures or place for storage of treasures, lands or property, and house and home.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So something, we'll get to the ninth house, but if we look here and we see that the third house is the house of short journeys, the ninth house is a journey to holy places, shrines, and pilgrimages. It's also, in general, a house for longer distance journeys. And the 12th house can also be a house for journeys. So just something to keep in mind, we can actually look and see like journeys within shorter distances, more of your everyday stuff would be looked at through the third house. Through the ninth and the 12th house, we would see longer journeys or greater travel. Would the two of you mind taking turns reading the, was it the fifth through the eighth house?
Fifth house, amulets, sacred diagrams, sacred spells and prayers, learning, knowledge, intellect, management ability, children, corruption, falling from high position, mental distress. And sixth house, maternal uncle, causing death, enemies, wound, boil, scar, sore, cancer, stepmother, bearing bow and weapons.
Okay.
The seventh house is wife and spouse, medium distant journey, commerce, trade, misplaced items, momentary loss, and death. Eighth house is longevity, battle, war, enjoyment of fighting, enemies, deceit, bearing weapons, forts, inheritance, knowledge of the past and future, and all things like this.
Great. So something you're probably noticing is a lot of this stuff seems irrelevant to our daily life, like weapons, all of that. We can look at that on one level from a mundane chart when we're casting it for the country and looking and seeing, you know, will the country go to war this year, that sort of thing. But, it, you know, if you were to take that into modern day stuff of just general concepts of fighting or argumentation, those are things that we can look at. You know, hopefully no one actually has to deal in their life with the things that are described in this, but it's just something to look at. We, in essence, we have to look at the charts and study them enough to see how can we modernize them. You know, like this this tradition in general has some really great things about looking at modern stuff that, you know, many astrologers have looked at and have more or less agreed upon. As like, this is what this means, you know, when we see this, this means this. But a lot of it is being discovered for yourself too, and just engaging with charts and seeing like, you know, what the sixth house, you know, if you keep seeing something like Mars in the sixth house, what does that mean? That sort of thing. So I will read, let's see, the ninth house and 10th house. So ninth house is fortunes, wife's brother, justice, brother's wife, journeys to holy places, shrines, pilgrimages. Oh, let's see, Pooja?
Yes.
Do you mind muting? Thank you. So ninth house, when we see here it says brother's wife, how would we have arrived at that? Let's see, Sarah.
Well, you go to what house represents the brother, which is siblings, which is which one? Oh, I don't know that yet. Three, two?
Yes,
three. Yeah, three. And then you go to the house that represents spouse, which is seven. So then you go seventh from the third.
Correct. Yeah. So then if you drew a line across, you would see that the third and the ninth are linked. So that's anything that's in here that you see something like, I don't know. We had something earlier. Things like the death of the parent or those sorts of things. We're looking at usually just a working of Bhavam as being described, and it's kind of an easier way to commit it to memory than to constantly be like, what's this, and then like count from it. So that's why those things are included in the list. Let's see. So then 10th house, power, role, authority, royalty, changeable work, livelihood, present profession, respect, honor, arrogance, pride, father, foreign business arrangements, living away from home, obligation, debt, and duty. And other things that are associated with the 10th house are government, as well as the boss. So anything that's in charge goes to the 10th house. And then 11th house, receipt of various valuable items, son's wife, income, revenue, gain, profit, growth, increase, prosperity, farm animals, which were used like money in ancient days. So again, we're seeing this concept of income, and there's this kind of throwback to the farm animals that would have been, you know, livestock that would have been your livelihood. Your income could easily have been measured in cows or, you know, crops. 12th house, expenses, loss, waste, spending, knowledge about the enemy, working, the working or opportunity of one's secret enemies, one's own losses are to be known. So more on loss and moksha in there. Any questions on this? These are the kind of basic building blocks that help us to understand the houses, as well as that chapter or page 145, that chart on house meanings that gives us a really good sense of the general bare bones structure for what the houses indicate. So I recommend really trying to commit the that chart to memory, just what each house signifies from the different levels of signification, and then really look over this. I won't necessarily say commit it to memory, but you should get to a point where it's kind of easy for you, if we're talking about something, to jump to and say like, oh, this makes sense, that's 10th house, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm surprised to see death associated with the 7th house and not the
8th
house.
Yeah, so we touched on it just a little bit. 7th house is considered a Maraka Sthana, or a death house. And the 2nd house is as well. So you'll see here it says 2nd house is death, longevity. And the 8th house it's not death, but it's about how much life you have.
Yeah, good job.
So,
yeah, he's a good student. The 8th is how much life you have, and the 7th is 12th from it.
Yeah, and I have a question on, for instance, in the 11th house. Now, I know the whole, our whole context and model and framework is coming from a certain time in history, and it's, you know, from what I can tell, it's largely from a male point of view, but like in the 11th house, you have son's wife. It's all about the world in relation to the male.
Right.
As we go through, hopefully you'll point out, and I'm sure you have in your own work, you know, give suggestions for how to interpret it in a modern context, in terms of looking at it from the feminine point of view. It's the daughter's so-and-so. It's the daughter's husband. It's the, you know what I'm saying?
Just yeah, definitely. Yeah, so when we're looking at the third house, they will often say siblings or younger brother, but it means anybody that was born younger than you, the first child born after you. So anytime it says younger brother, older brother, it can also be sister. But it is highly, the texts are highly patriarchal in nature. And so we can do a lot of modern interpretation and say that this is both male and female. You know, like if we're looking at the seventh house, it could say for a woman, a woman's chart, you could say it's the partner or the spouse. And in that sense, it could be male or female or the identity, you know, whatever that gender identity is. It's not necessarily stuck to a heterosexual relationship, you know. So in that way, we can look at our lives as modern people and see this how this relates to the world, you know. So it's not as stiff as these charts make it out to be. The other thing too is that questions around gender and sexuality were in India for a long period of time, and so we're not the first sorts of generations to be looking at this stuff. However, when we're looking at these texts, they are codified in a way that are looking mostly at it from a patriarchal standpoint. So just to keep in mind, you know, male or female, or third gender, you know, those are things that we can look at. Does that help, Doug?
Yeah, I just find it kind of intriguing. And I'm wondering from either your point of view of having counseled people or freedom, especially in this day and age, I'm guessing that if people are having difficulties in non-standard type of gender relationships, that probably more and more people will seek out the counseling or the guidance of Jyotish versus just a talk therapy. And it just would seem like it would potentially have a lot more insight and healing, you know, to offer people.
Oh, certainly. I think part of it is that, you know, like if you look at a person's chart, it's regardless of the gender, we're looking at karmic patterns that are in place, and that can play out as manifesting as a male or female or whatever gender in that person's life. So in that sense, if I think it's more up to the astrologer if they're willing to accept the modern paradigm or not, you know. But we can definitely provide a lot of healing and a lot of insight to people who are not within the typical patriarchal or heterosexual model. What are your thoughts, Freedom?
I mean, we'll get into this a little bit more in the Navamsha section, but if somebody is not that standard normative, whatever you want to call it, it shows up in the Navamsha as how it's different. And so, you know, they were really clear back in the ancient days, like if a woman was a lesbian, you didn't want to marry her to your son. Like, she's not going to be happy. So, you know, there's combinations for everything. And they were, there's nothing that we have at this point in time besides computers. Actually, no, they had computers back then too. They were just analog computers. They were, you know, they were like cogs and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so there's really not much that we have now that they didn't have and don't account for in some place or other. answer? Does that, I mean, so we can counsel anybody. Same rules apply. There might be a variation. One of the best astrologers, and when I say best astrologers, best predictive skilled astrologers is a gay guy who lives in, what is it, Eastern Europe. And, you know, he uses every, there's no difference in the rules. I see people from San Francisco, even multiple partners will show up in the chart. And there's even, for example, if the person gets divorced and gets remarried, you're going 8th from the Upapada. If the person has 3 wives, you're going 6th from Upapada. So, you know, and so yeah, like, I mean, can you think of something that you think might not be in the chart that can't be seen that, you know... Yeah, am I answering you, Doug?
Yeah, and I like the way that, I mean, this whole paradigm starts out from the point of view of spirit, you know, not from the point of view of being identified with the meat body. And so if you're a talking therapist, you're not trying to talk somebody out of their choice because they're screwed up and neurotic, and, you know, you're trying to help them get clear on what is their actual nature and their ultimate choice that would help them grow and be happiest. But yeah, I just like where the whole thing comes from.
Yeah. And you know, really, you hit on an important point. One of the most beautiful things is we can bring clarity.
Yeah.
And sometimes people like, oh, I got this problem. It's like, oh yeah, this is why you got that problem. They're like, oh, and they all of a sudden relax. It's like, okay, so like, this was meant to be here. This is like, and it's like, yes, you're meant to deal with this. And so there's almost this, ability to, accept certain things where at the same time, I remember, and I'm so sad he's not with me anymore, but there was this one, it was this one guy who was studying Jyotish with me, and we got to the Arudha Lagna chapter, and I basically showed in his chart, you know, like, he had an addiction to gambling and sex. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, so the combination is here, this, and, you know, and I did it in a nice kind of way. He didn't come back anymore. I don't know if, like, it was just picking a little bit too much that he wanted to, but he's like, well, you know, he was just, like, a little stunned that it just, like, right there, it can be seen in the chart. And so, you know, is it good or is it bad? If the person doesn't want something, of course we do, you know, remedies. But then you get into all kinds of, like, ethical things. Like, for example, you see child abuse in a chart. And you know, it's one thing to see somebody who's 40 and say, hey, the reason that there's this going on, you were abused when you were young, and that, and you know, they're like, oh my gosh, that was in the chart, and they, like, you know, they have whatever experience. There's another thing when somebody gives birth to a kid and you see the chart and it shows child abuse. So at that point you're like, this is, you know, like, I got to do something to, you know, like, where do you draw the line with ethics? And we all have a different line. And we have to trust that the person is coming to to the astrologer that they're supposed to come to based upon their karma. You know, and then I'll throw out a few other ethical things. Like, so in the Saptamsha, it shows every single conception a woman has had. So if a woman, a sperm, an egg, and an atma, because there's 3 that come together from the Vedic point. It's not a sperm and an egg. It's a sperm, an egg, and an atma. When they come together and create that pregnancy, that shows up in the chart. Even if it was, whether it was, and we don't differentiate between it being a miscarriage or being an abortion. It was a lost child. And we go to the next one for the next child. And so each exact pregnancy shows up. So now, do you sit there and what does that mean about, like, is abortion good? Is it bad? What, you know, does it mean it's good or bad? But each atma, each conception shows up. Let's see, another And so we're counting each of them. And, you know, when we do children, we have to, like, know if somebody's... And I just say, have you lost any children? You know, it's a nice way to make it so that it's, you know, have you had any abortions? Or, you know, it's, have you lost any children? Another ethical issue. So we talked about child abuse, abortions. You see, it's all there. You know, there's nothing that we think is new that's not there. So one important thing from the Vedic perspective, transgender has always been there, and there's combinations for that. Transsexual is just not supported in the Vedic paradigm. For somebody to take hormones and to start altering how their system is working, from the Ayurvedic system, it's, you know, if a person, they're a woman born in a male body, then that's what they are, a woman born in a male body. And there's in Vedic culture, there's a place for that. You know, there's jobs for men who dress like women. And they dress like women, and, you know, it's pretty obvious that they're not real women. And just as an example of two of the most popular jobs for them, is they are often bill collectors. So if you owe money, they'll show up at your house. Hey, honey, how you doing? You owe some money here? Like, you know, and they'll come hang out with you for the day and make sure you know. They also go to weddings because it's considered, because they're connected to the planet Mercury. And Mercury can make a woman not give birth. So they bless the wife before marriage. And, you know, and you give them lots of money and stuff, but to come, and you're basically taking care of your Mercury dosha by getting blessed by them. So, you know, there's like these roles in Vedic society for somebody like that. But that's a woman in a man's body, or however we want to say it, to alter it with chemicals, we don't accept that, you know, because then you're not accepting who you are. You're trying to be something other than you are. Just a different perspective on that. Let's see. Am I missing any other weird, crazy thing that you think would never be in the chart?
What do you mean by you don't accept it? Are you just like...
If a person's trying to take drugs to kind of change their sex?
Sure.
So then I mean, if they're putting testosterone in their body, the liver is going to start to have problems, all the organs are going to not function properly, and all that functioning not properly disturbs the consciousness. And that disturbing of the consciousness, I mean, the suicide rate on transsexuals is extremely high. I believe partly it's because of that distortion that's happening, and partly because the person's trying to be something they're not. If you're a woman in a man's body, that's what you are, a woman in a man's body. Be happy being a woman in a man's body. Be happy being a man who wears women's clothing. There's a guy that walks around town, you know, pretty... Do you know who I'm talking about? It's obvious he's a guy dressed like a woman. And that from a Vedic perspective, is that exists. It shows up in the chart. We work with that. Just differentiating that. And abortion, good or bad, I mean, it shows up. Somebody, if they have only three kids and they have three abortions, you know, and they got to that end where it shows there's no more kids, that's the end, you know? If somebody has nine kid possibilities and, you know, they had three abortions, then it's not a good or a bad, it's just what it is. Yet at the same time, I remember I had a client once, and I don't know if I mentioned it in the recording, but she went to, or you guys haven't even gotten that far, she went to some Indian pundit guy who's, you know, supposed to be super spiritual, and she told him she had an abortion, and he yelled at her for 20 minutes. Like, poor woman, you know, like, the scripture just says what causes an abortion and whether there is one or is not. There's no judgment.
Yeah, I think I'll add in on that okay. It really is dependent on the astrologer. There's this, like, what is the astrologer bringing to the consult, and what is their background and level of acceptance of these topics? So the texts that we're looking at, they're not giving any sort of moral implication. They're just showing what exists. And as the astrologer, we can choose to, like, within LGBT communities, we can choose to be accepting or not accepting. And so that's, that says more about the individual than it does about the Jyotish itself.
And I think I started with telling you guys a story about the that one client who became a sex worker. And it was like probably our fourth or fifth consultation. She sees me yearly, sometimes twice a year. And she blamed me. She said, oh, that practice you gave me, it totally got me over my shame. Now I'm a sex worker. And I just sat there. I just, okay. And I kind of moved on and didn't go into it. But that's my own thing with, like, you know, my prejudice or whatever view of sex work is not being a good thing. And so I moved on, or my insecurity, or what I don't know, whatever the word is, I was like, oh my gosh, and she's blaming me for this.
Or was she happy though? Is that like a liberation for her?
It was a total liberation for her. She was like feeling completely liberated, but still I was in the place of like,
oh my god.
Oh my gosh, like you know, like, and
yeah, I mean, I think this points out something too of like, same with psychologists or anybody that's in a position of power, a person who practices Jyotish is also going to encounter things that are triggering for them, you know? So like being aware of that, also understanding like the whole concept of place, time, and culture, and where we are within that, you know, we, as people who read charts, we are also coloring it with our own perception. So that's, I think that's a bigger thing to look at.
And I've had clients that, like, they make, you know, pornography movies. I had clients who were in pornography movies, but something about her blaming me for, you know, yeah, that's where my line of ethics was like, wait a minute here. Doug, any other thing that you think could not possibly be in a Vedic chart?
No, I think you've covered it all. Appreciate the discussion.
And I don't want to get too into, you know, but they talk about voyeurism and sexuality. They talk about bestiality in the texts. They talk about, you know, So it's like literally all there, and it's how we hold all of that. And bringing up the concept of how we hold all that, I'll go on a little tangent. So I'm gonna probably put this in volume 3 in 10 years, whenever I get around to writing volume 3, because volume 3 is all about just like giving readings, you know. And how long do I make this? See, this is why Ian is great, because he can cover this information in a few hours. For me, you'd be 6 hours on it. You know?
Yeah, but you give such a lively color to it.
So there's a system of psychology called Common Factors, and Common Factors Astrology. They did a bunch of research, and it took 20 years to do a meta-analysis of all these different psychology research, and a meta-analysis means they took all the results and they plugged them in to see how they all add up. And they found that, for Freudian psychology, Jungian psychology, cognitive behavioral psychology, all the psychologies, they all heal people the same level. None of them is better than another. And so they're like, well, what's going on? They're all working the same here. But they're all working way better than somebody who didn't go to therapy. So somehow therapy is working, but we can't see which one's working. So they did further analysis, and they found that the people who weren't good at healing people weren't good at healing people in all different schools. And the people that were good at healing people were good at healing people no matter what school they came from. So the common factors psychology said, well, what do all the people that are good have in common? What do all the people that are bad have in common? And they came up with a list of a few things that people that heal people do. Common factor psychology. So the first one is there's the therapist and there's the client. I know that sounds funny, but that's the number one. There's a therapist and a client. Computers don't work. You know, people have done all kinds of stuff to try and make these computer programs that you can analyze yourself and do all this. There needs to be another person. The second most important thing is the therapist has unconditional positive regard towards the client. Meaning whatever the person shares, you're not making them feel bad for it. A person is sharing and they feel accepted by you. Doesn't mean that something is good or bad, but it, you know, like whatever you're judging, but you just, you accept the person that, okay, this is what happened. The woman who told me she was a sex worker was like, okay, that's what happened. And I just said, okay, good, you know, and I brushed it over a little bit, but you know, I didn't sit there and say, oh, that's horrible. Oh no, like, why are you doing that? Oh, you know what I mean? I didn't make her feel bad. I didn't not accept her. So the term is unconditional positive regard. So as we discuss this, that number two most important thing for a therapeutic situation to happen, for somebody to walk out of after your reading and feel like, oh my gosh, that was so good. I'm like, I don't know what they just did to me, but I feel better. You just have to have unconditional positive regard. Whatever they say, you're like, I get that. I get, you know, this is going on in your chart. That's making that happen. Yep. They're like, okay, that's happening. It's, you know, it's not good. It's not bad. Just holding them. So, and when I looked at the list of common factors, I'm like, as astrologers, we got everything in that list.
Oh yeah.
Every single thing. We're doing therapy. Just, we have everything that it takes to get rid of any psychological issue.
Well, I would say there are things that I wouldn't feel comfortable addressing, but yeah, certainly people with professional psych licenses, I would refer to. Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Parole, hey.
Hi, I'm just wondering if you can hear me. I'm out of the country. I'm using someone else's device. I don't know how to mute it or anything, so. I'll try and be as quiet as possible.
Okay. Unconditional positive regard. Write that really big in your notes. Unconditional positive regard. And there's a client and there's a therapist. So that means that a computer program will never replace us. Like, we need human interaction.
And I have a question.
Accept it, yes.
Something that may or may not come up in the chart. What if a person has, you know, like lost a child or lost somebody close, and they question if someone else has come into their life, like a new being, like a new baby or something that might be that same spirit?
Yeah.
Can that be read?
That is more in the realm of, some would say yes. I would say highly doubtful. I have a few charts of people who are reincarnated. You know, I have their old chart and their new chart. And theoretically, there should be similarities between the D60 Varga and the Rashi of the new chart. And there should be a similarity between the sign of the Atmakarika and the Navamsha and the new Atmakarika. I haven't done enough research nor seen it work well enough. Those are the rules. But that's one that I would offer to a well-qualified psychic. Yeah. And there are these things that, you know, we do have to recommend and say, hey, this is the realm of a psychic. If somebody's, I'm trying to think, lost things you can do in a prashna. There's just certain realms, certain little things like that that are good to recommend out to a psychic.
Question,
yeah.
With some of this ethical stuff,
yeah,
this might be not really ethical, but just when you the child abuse and mm-hmm. someone just had, is it totally like, you know, you may not want to bring that up exactly, but I know that sometimes if you like give a remedy for something, mm-hmm. it's going to also help remedy that. Is that totally like
having a child or having
having the child abuse combination? And then let's say that like if you were to like focus a remedy which would help that, but mm-hmm. you'd call their attention more to like a different aspect of what else it could remedy. But in
we want to directly address the okay. abuse. We want to directly, because yeah. abuse affects the relationship that the person is having. Right. You know, it'll whether it's a man or a woman, it'll show up with their wife or their husband. And it'll show up as, you know, places they're not open and ways that things aren't working. And it's important that we sit there and say, the thing that's not working here, that's related to that abuse. And in order to work on that, we have to work on this abuse. And, you know, we need to... And so, because we're going to give a mantra-type remedy and a deity-type remedy, then they need to also maybe go to a therapist and say, okay, like, why am I going to a therapist trying to work on this with my husband when I should maybe go and do some therapy for a year by myself and work on this little thing, and then my husband, I might not even have to work on that with my husband.
What about, like, if you see child abuse and they haven't started abusing their child yet?
Oh, them as the abuser?
Yeah.
Ethical issues, yes. Ethical issues.
So you can't really, like, sneak a remedy before it even becomes a problem.
Yeah, then ethically I would give a remedy and say it's for something else or something of that nature. And also, let's see. I had a client once... And I've seen my teacher have a client who had a combination for abusing children. And I wasn't too happy with how my teacher handled it. But how I handled it when I saw it is I said, don't, you know, the person, they wanted to be a teacher. And I said, no, you don't want to be a teacher. And particularly with young kids, if you want to be a teacher, be a university professor. And don't work in schools. It's not going to be good for you. It's not going to put you in a position that you want to be in. There's tendencies here, and you don't want to have to deal with the implications of those tendencies. Put yourself in a good environment where you don't have to deal with that. And that's how I said it to him. Mm-hmm. So I didn't say exactly, but that made it, I think, clear enough without, you know, because sometimes that's how you got to... You tell them how to fix the issue, and then they get that, okay, the person's talking about this issue here.
What is that combination?
We're not talking, that's not in this chapter. We're on houses now, so. That's more advanced stuff. So first we have to read a chart. yes, with that answer?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I'll let Ian keep going.
Okay. Actually, Freedom, do you want to look at or talk about this part? Because it's, I think you've done more research in this. The six and eight lords.
Six and eighth lords. Oh my.
On page 154.
Well, why don't you go into it? And I'll make a comment if need be.
Sure.
Otherwise, that'll be the rest of the class.
So, page 154, disease is caused by malefic planets, as well as the sixth and eighth lords. The house placement of the sixth lord and the Rashi placement of the eighth lord become important in determining health problems. So, that part here where it says house placement of the sixth lord, I recommend highlighting that, and then Rashi placement of the eighth lord, because those are kind of rules that you haven't really seen specifically, and they can be tricky to embed in memory. Anyways, it's a helpful thing to look back at. The signs are created by the universe itself and show the innate nature of the native. In this way, the eighth lord will show the flaws we have inherited from our family, society, and that we have been created with. or that which we have been created with. These are internal flaws, weaknesses that we need to work to purify. If the eighth lord is in Cancer, it can show problems with the chest and lungs, independent of the house it is placed in. So see, in this point, we're starting to look back at like those earlier lists where we had cancer associated with the chest region. So these are things that we can totally use to look at to see where there might be congenital issues.
And that key word is nija, N-I-J-A, means you were born with it. It's there. It could be genetic. It could be karmic. It could be in the family. You'll often, if there's alcoholism in the family, we're going to see some Eighth Lord interaction in order to make that person an alcoholic too. It's there. It can show anomaly, the heart not being formed properly. It can show nija. It's innate. Keyword with the Eighth Lord.
All right. And then the houses are determined by the period in time when the soul took birth and show the karma we create for ourselves. Therefore, the Sixth Lord's house placement takes importance, as it is the negative actions performed against oneself. The Sixth Lord needs discipline to live in a right way in order to avoid disease caused by it. The Sixth Lord placed in the fourth house will indicate problems with the chest, heart, lungs, independent of what sign it is placed in. Also oftentimes you'll see the natural zodiac placement as well as the house placement lines up in these similar attributes. So fourth house being the chest and the pleural cavity, all of that, and then Cancer as well being related to the chest and heart. Though they're not always exact. So it's good if you're going to do a lot of medical astrology to focus on the differences between those significations.
And we get medical astrology is primarily level two, but this is key. This whole page right here is super most, the first half, sixth and eighth lord, that's super important for physical disease. Baddha Kesha is super important for mental disease. This is, and a lot of the stuff in volume one is planting seeds that get to grow into trees in volume two. And so this is just giving you, this is what the realm we look. And when I say, seeds to, I once met this and I had only been doing astrology for 6 or 7 years. But within a good tradition, a tradition that gives this kind of foundation. And I went, people were like, oh, there's this astrologer, 25, 30 years doing astrology, big guy, and he says, you should meet him. So I went to meet him and we talked for a little bit. And then I looked at his chart and I sat down, I said, you did this and this and you spent a few years doing that. And he said, yeah. I said, you got to change this in the bum show 2 minutes this way. 30 years it didn't even have a great Navamsha. So what's 30 years of astrology if you don't know what to look at? So the key is, I'm just giving a little bit here thing, So even if you're not a master of it, how Dr. Ladd talks about this is, just look at the chart. Somebody has this problem, take a minute and look. See if you can see some things lining up. Even if you're not a master medical astrologer yet, Just you can look at the charts and the charts, you can start seeing patterns. So this is what we're looking at when we're looking at disease. We're looking at malefics and the sixth and eighth lord.
So are you saying that these types of things that you point out, they're going to become, they're going to activate kind of early in our mental algorithm right when we look at a chart? Like we're kind of going to go through a mental step-by-step deal, like?
I didn't get the question 100%.
When we start assessing and interpreting charts, Something like this will be high on our list to scan for right off the bat in terms of pattern scanning.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Looking where those lords are, there's going to be some problems. And often, you have a form that you have people fill out to do a reading. You say, so what do you want to know? And they'll, if disease is the big thing, they'll sit there and say, I'm suffering from this and this and this, you know, and I want some help. And you look like, is it sixth Lord causing it? Is it eighth Lord causing it? And that's also going to give us an idea of how easy it's going to be to cure and what's causing it. And what if, you know, Saturn happens to be transiting over the eighth Lord, and the person has only been, it's been active for a year and a half, and we see one more year of Saturn transiting, we're like, ah, okay, this is here. You know, you're going to be suffering for this another year. It's going to start getting better after this transit ends. So like that, you know, this is, all the other techniques are going to build on top of this little dictum of the sixth and eighth Lord. Does that make sense?
Yep, thanks.
Okay.
Freedom, do you mind adding a little bit more to the Bhadaka, the Bhadakish and Bhadaka Sana? Because we talked a bit about it at the beginning, but I think you can get more depth.
So whenever somebody says, I'm feeling stuck, I always look at the Bhadakish. So that's the magic word with Bhadakish, stuck. It's, we can say it, Bhadaka literally means obstacle, but what the person's going to say, the person's not going to say, I'm feeling like I have a lot of obstacles. That's just not the English. People say, I'm feeling stuck. Things aren't moving. What's not working here? Person's been applying for visas and the visas aren't coming through. Somebody's been trying and trying to get like this and it's not coming through. You know, when somebody's feeling stuck, we know the Bhadakish is involved. And so that's on a general sense we use the Bhadakish. And in volume 2, there's a whole chapter. We go really in depth into Bhadakish. So this is, again, kind of just planting that seed so you know. So as you're looking at charts, you're remembering, okay, this is this important thing that I should look for. Even if you don't have that advanced skill of using it, make sure that you're aware that this is a planet that's getting people stuck. Now, what's the difference between... let's say, so in front of me, I have Perul's chart right now, and Perul is a Pisces rising, and for Pisces, it's a dual sign, so which house is the Bhadaka Sthana?
11th.
Huh? For Pisces. Pisces. It's a dual sign.
A dual.
Seventh house. And she has Jupiter and Moon in the seventh. So Jupiter and Moon together, is that a good or a bad combination? Jupiter, Moon?
Positive.
Positive. Why are you doubting? Come on. Don't say it like this. It's a positive combination. And but it's Bhadaka Sthana. So there's this really incredible promise, but is it coming through? There's all these stuck things around it. So we see this, like, it's almost like there's this, the grass, you know, they always say, the grass is always greener on the other side. It really is greener over there. It's like, how do I get to there, you know? And so with relationship, we see this wonderful person promised, but there's the Bhadaka blocking it from coming. So this is one way to interpret it. Now, Bhadakesha, Lord of Bhadakesha is Mercury. Lord of the Bhadaka Sthana is Mercury. So Mercury becomes the Bhadakesha. Bhadakesha has gone to the eighth house. So what are things that might be causing her areas of blockage? Eighth house. What's the eighth house?
Deep soul searching?
Deep soul searching. You think she can get stuck in deep soul searching?
Would that be...
Can get a little excessive, right? You hearing all this, Perul? Well, she's muted. You probably don't know how to unmute.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know it very well. Yes.
All right. So there you see. We just use that. And I don't have everybody from the class's chart yet. Ian, you have it all? Make sure... email me all those JHD files.
I'll send it to you. I just realized I was on mute as I said that, so...
Yeah. And let's see, is there anybody else in here? Caroline, I have Caroline's already, so.
Yeah,
oh,
My body cash is conjunct Rahu. So it's like double.
So it's double. That's right. So she is a Cancer rising. So for Cancer rising, which house is Bhadakastana? The 11th. And she has nothing in the 11th house. Take a deep breath. So there's no planets that fell into the stuck house. Okay? So we're good on that level. But we still have Venus. And Venus is gone into the 10th house and it's conjunct Rahu. So Venus in the 10th is promising, it's a benefic. Is a benefic in the 10th house going to give a good career? Benefic in the 10th house? Is that good career going to come easy, or is there something stuck not letting her get that? All right. So level two, we go into remedies for Bhadaka. Here we just got to know, like, this is where there's an area that she's stuck. So in a consultation, we'd be like, hey, you probably aren't happy with the work you're doing, and you're feeling stuck about what to go and where to do, and she said, yeah, how do you know that? I've had situations where people have been like, did my husband tell you that? Like, they're literally, they don't believe that I see it in the chart. Did my wife say that? As if did your wife say that? You think your wife emailed me before you came to tell me something? Because of course, guess what? Bhadaka also is going to affect the realm of relationship, you know? And we looked at parole. She had Mercury as Bhadakesha. So the fact that Mercury is Bhadakesha, we can see that there is some difficulties in the realm of communication. Here with Caroline, we see that the Bhadakesha is Venus, so we see that there's going to be some more stuckness in the realm of relationship.
But Freedom, does that stuff ever change? Like, when you look at the transits, for example, the way things are going with Jupiter, conjunct my natal Jupiter, and, you know, the Venus, you know, it shows like a really good time for me, the Venus subdasha, and possibility of me finally meeting somebody and I've just sort of given up that it's ever gonna happen. Like, this is it, I, with the stars, where what can bring that forward that's been stuck practically my whole life, or for anybody?
So in your reading notes, you'll see there's probably a remedy that I gave for that Jupiter moon. And that's going to be an important remedy to do in order to make a relationship happen. And we're not going to
go into, otherwise it doesn't.
And we're not going to go into Bhadaka remedies now, because we got more house stuff to dig into. Our goal.
But in general, if you don't do the remedies, it won't happen, correct?
Yeah.
There's never like a bit of relief.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, doing charts for so long, I've met, occasionally people walk into this office or onto my Skype who I'm sitting there and I say, you know, in order to get over this, you need to be donating money to children's education. And the person says, oh, when I was 35, I opened up a school for orphans in this and this country, and it became the biggest school, and now it's state-run. And I was like, okay, so you took care of that, you know? And so there are people who just inherently listen to their soul and are led to do these remedies on their own. Others of us, we, you know, need the guidance to step up to these bigger remedies. But I mean, and it was a particular guy. He had a really good life. He had all kinds of issues in his chart. And the guy had done, and I'm talking about this kid starting a school thing. Every remedy I gave the guy, he already had done. I mean, I'd never seen it before. Like, every remedy I could give, like, he'd done. He had such a good life. I was like, man, you had a good life. He said, yeah, I had a really good life. Yeah, like this. All right. Next section. We're into. I'll explain 155. So in the next edition, This section got expanded on one page, 155. I turned it into two pages, which we can actually, maybe I'll hijack from Bhavakar, because.
Go ahead.
Well, you know what? Do Bhavakarkas, and then we'll come back, and I'll do page 155 after Bhavakarkas.
Sure.
Which, you know, is kind of making it... I think I should switch that, too. Because now that I expanded that, Bhavakarkas will be better first. Okay, you do Bhavakarkas.
Okay. So, we were talking earlier, this concept of Nisargika Karakas. So the Bhava Karakas, or the Bhavas, houses also have inherent significators. And you can see in this chart a very general rule. The part that says Karaka Adhyaya, verse 34, and it talks about that the Lagna, the sun would be the natural significator for the Lagna. So these sorts of things we're not necessarily looking at as lords of those houses, but we are looking at them as natural significators. So they're a second layer of interpretation that we can look at. So second house being related to Jupiter, we see the second house as being the house of savings. And we can make that natural jump that Jupiter relating to wealth and abundance, or Jupiter being related, and the second house being related to family, we can see that Jupiter can indicate children and lineage, or ancestry. Third house being Mars, the siblings naturally tend to have a little bit of competition or competitiveness with each other. And the level in which the third house is also argumentation can be easily seen with that connection to Mars. So we can continue on looking down through this chart and see why these things relate to each other. Fourth house, we talked about the mother being related to the moon. The other thing that isn't shown in here or in the chart below is, and you could draw in, is that the moon in the fourth house can also have Venus with it. And Venus, though, representing luxuries and vehicles as the fourth house significator. So then we also have this concept of multiple karakas for a house. And one of the big things is to look at the 10th house in this chart. And we see that there is Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter, and Sun. And so when we're looking at someone's work, we can look at, like, say, Mercury. And Mercury would indicate the skills that the person has for their work. Saturn would indicate the level or the amount of hard work in which one could endure. Jupiter would be for the intelligence or the ability to direct the mind and accomplish the tasks at hand. And then we would see the sun for the level of respect or the level of authority that one attains within that profession. So concepts like work are actually, you know, we have one word for it, but we are looking at so many different aspects of it to determine what would be the best fit for a person's job. So say if someone came to you for a consultation asking about their career, like what line of work should I go into? Well, we can see that these four things on top of the 10th house itself and the 10th house lord are all aspects that we're going to be looking at. So this is going to give us a very colored perspective of what the person should be looking at. So in that case, like Mercury being natural traits, Saturn being the discipline and hard work it takes to accomplish certain things, the Sun being the rise in position, authority, power, all of that. These are all different things that we would be looking at. Does that make sense? And then, so down here, you know, like up on that first chart on this page, it will show the sixth house with Mars. And then we see down here, Mars and Saturn are both in there. And we can look and see that the sixth house isn't an easy house. It's a house of enemies. And both Mars and Saturn are malefics. So we can kind of understand a little bit more if we wanted to know, like, well, what is the nature of one's enemies or the ability to overcome them? We can see what's in the sixth house. We can also see what's associated with Mars or where Mars is placed, as well as Saturn. So this gives us added depth. We've got so many different frames of reference to look at. Anything you want to add to that, Freedom?
Oh, I'm getting ready for the next section. I didn't actually listen, so.
Okay. Let's see. Any questions on that? Maybe if someone has a particular query as to, like, what would we be looking at?
I have a quick question. So, for example, in a friend of mine's chart, Scorpio rules the sixth house, and he has Mars retrograde.
Mars and K2 rule the house. Scorpio, the sixth house is Scorpio ruled by Mars and K2.
Actually has Mars in Scorpio in the sixth house retrograde, and Saturn in the 11th in Aries, also ruled by Mars. And I've just noticed that he's doesn't have any kind of temper. He doesn't have any sort of visible enemies. He's very, very well loved and well liked person. He also has a very strong constitution. And when I look at his chart, I wonder how that Mars retrograde in Scorpio, in the sixth, because it's retrograde, how does that represent, or how does that take care of him not having enemies? Or would it indicate, like, he does have enemies, but he can overcome them because Mars is retrograde in its own sign and in its
well its own sign. So one thing to look at is it indicates the amount of strength one has, and the sixth house, we can look at if there are strong malefics there, the person is able to have either great immunity or in regards to illness, or the ability to overcome whatever problems come their way. So it just because you're not currently seeing that they have a lot of enemies or anything, that can be more of an issue of timing and dasha and what's playing out in the person's life. But if we're looking at, like, health, and the person just generally has a good constitution, that's probably because they have so much Agni internally that they can fight off whatever is coming that could potentially bring about illness.
And would it be stronger if it was a direct Mars? Like, what's the difference between, his happens to be retrograde, so.
Right, so that is something we'll definitely talk about in the next chapter on strengths and status. But for now, it's good to just think of Mars is in its own sign in the sixth house. And it's also a natural significator of that house. So Mars is actually quite content in that spot. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
I guess in that same, what you're saying in time period, so if you're going through, like, if he was going through a Mars dasha, would it then, like, ignite? Would that be a more likely time for there to be enemies or disease, or does that just, yeah.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Yeah, the significations will unfold during that time period.
It's a combination that shows he overcomes his enemies. So how can you overcome your enemies if you don't have any?
That's me in high school.
All right. So we're getting pretty close to 8 o'clock. Babakarkas are super important. Make sure you memorize them. When we get into house interpretation, they are a primary, most important thing. These Babakarkas, have them memorized. That page 156. Memorize. I just sent everybody who's here with us now, and Dan, who mentioned that he's not... Dan is a musician. He's a... he's a professional musician, and when he gets a gig, he can't say no, you know, for class. And so the last two classes, he was asked to play somewhere, and so that's why he's not with us tonight. But I made sure that he got it. In general, if you can't make class, give an email. Let us know what's up, so we know you're not here. We're not waiting for you in the beginning, and we can make sure that you get whatever was missed or anything of that nature. So everybody here and Dan, I just sent. I just checked. It's 3 pages that are added into this page 155 zone to explain this chart on page 155. I on page 155 now, there's just the questions. It's like, okay, do this and discover. And I think it's a little bare bones. So I wrote this book, just so you guys know, I was working full time, and I'd come home after work and I'd work on this during the night so that I could teach on the weekends the classes that I used to give. And so that's how this book came. So in some places it could be a little bit more, but you know, like if you have a full-time job and an hour to get to work and an hour to get home, it's, you know.
Did you send it on email, Freedom?
Yeah, I just sent it.
Okay.
I just sent it out in a PDF form. And it's written in blue. And the reason it's blue is because in my notes, all the things that are going to be added in the next edition, which who knows when the next edition will be, but are in blue so that I know, so that when I give it to the person that puts it in for printing, they know what to add and where. But so it's blue, and that's the reason. And you'll see the questions. I redesigned the questions, the 21, 22, 23, 24. Those got redesigned too. So in the PDF, you'll see that they're slightly different, and some are in blue and some are in black. And the black is because that's exactly how it is in the book, and the blue means that there was a new change. But read that PDF, because we're at 8 o'clock now, and we could probably spend half an hour, 45 minutes on this next class. And so that's what we're going to start class with next week, and I'll teach that. And for the first half of class, and then the second half of class, Ian is going to teach the rest of this chapter, so that we're done this chapter next week. When we're done this chapter, then we do chapter 7. And up to chapter 7 is where I let people join. Because after chapter 7, you have to know the material that's before in order to make sense of what happens after. So when we get to chapter 7, we're going to cover chapter 7, and maybe we'll give a month after chapter 7, and we'll only meet every other week in that month. And when we meet, we'll just do kind of, you'll see that in the online course, there's a class that's called Review Class. And so there'll be a review class that you can listen to. And after chapter 7, I want you guys to kind of connect with each other and quiz each other, talk to each other, make cards. So it's going to give you a whole month to get everything before chapter 7 under your belt. In the beginning, when I started, I said, you know, we're breaking everything in the pieces and then we start putting together. So after chapter 7, we're putting things together. Let's see, what's after chapter 7? It's called... And chapter 7's got lots to memorize, too. Then we do Bhavapadas. And when we get in the Bhavapadas, That's the chapter I told you, the guy, you know, when I picked out his gambling addiction, he didn't come back. I'm like, oh my gosh, like what? And I don't know, maybe there was some other reason. But, you know, like people sometimes get a little sensitive to how their whole life, these things they think are secret, they're not actually, it's all there. Who we are is there. And so that's where he made it to there, and the Bhavapada chapter showed him that. So when we get to the Bhavapada chapter, literally, we'll show you how to do it, and then you're going to be reading charts and making interpretations. You know, we're not going to be just learning some concept, we're going to actually be interpreting concepts. So chapter 8 is where we make that switch, and there's 16 chapters, so we're in that middle of the book there. And is it equal between the two? Yeah, it's about equal. So we'll again, let's see, I'm going to repeat myself and say, study the PDF that we did, fill out the chart so that you can get a feel for it. We'll cover that the first half of next class. We'll finish chapter 6 in the second half. And then we'll jump over to chapter 7. And chapter 7 is, Ian just, Parul was asking about retrogression, you know, like, is that a good or bad thing? All the, what's a good or a bad thing? And I don't know if good or bad is the right word. How strong or weak? How, you know, intense or peaceful? How happy or sad is it going to make you? Yeah, all that's in chapter 7. Really taking these results and showing us how to turn it into that. So, and as I said, after 7, we'll take a really slow month, and well, it'll be a slow month for me and Ian. It'll be a midterm cramming for you guys, and there's no midterm test that you can fail. You know, so you don't have to like get. No anxiety, but your goal is to really memorize this stuff in the first part. That way, when we start going into techniques of reading charts, it's just like, yeah, I'm reading it. Yeah, I'm interpreting it. This is fun. Oh, I just saw this in so-and-so's chart. Oh, you know, if you memorize all this stuff, then it starts to be fun. If you don't memorize it, then you're looking through the thing. You're feeling bad because you don't know what it means. That's not fun. You don't enjoy it. All right. Any questions?
Will you be here next week too?
I guess I'm going to be doing the beginning opening chart. So yeah, because Ian hasn't gotten that yet from me. So, and why I didn't do it? I mean, the thing is, the concept is right there in the layout, and the questions are kind of asking you to understand what I'm teaching in the addition, but the addition just really spells it out and holds your hand through it. So it's and Ian hasn't gotten that yet, so I'm gonna and he knows it, but he doesn't, he knows it from not from the hand holding method, so you guys get that. And yeah, so I'll be here in the beginning. Any other questions? I think we're going to be using Zoom because the Any meeting, I don't know what's going on with it, but it wasn't giving me a video. It's been crashing on me. Is this class recorded? Yes, the class got audio recorded. And with this new platform, I'm going to start video recording it as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yes. All right. You're welcome. All right. So lots of study. It's yeah. What's this latest text? I'm trying to think, is there anything important else to This is the bump. This is the bump. So once we make it over 7, it gets fun.
It is fun.
It's the concept of fun. But there's still, at this point, it's work. There's also a lot of work. And you don't, besides the cool philosophy, you don't get there's no payoff yet for all the work. Once we get into 8 and past, there gets to be all this payoff because all of a sudden you're starting to, this chart that like is a bunch of letters and numbers and all that kind of stuff, all of a sudden it starts meaning stuff. I did a 5-minute reading for my accountant the other day. Not my accountant, I have a woman that twice a year comes in, takes all my receipts and does my bookkeeping, and she hasn't been able to get pregnant. So we looked at her chart. And she looked at it, she's like, you make sense of that? And I'm like, and you make sense of, you know, she gives me these data files and all, like, I don't even look at them. I'm like, just give it to the accountant, let her fill it out. Like, I pay the money. Like, I'm like, I'm not even going to try and make sense of any of that. Like, so, you know, it's like an accountant, like, or a bookkeeper, like, all these numbers make sense to them. They can look at it and they can see what's good and bad. And for us, you know, we look at this chart with all these numbers and letters and abbreviations. And I mean, look at the chart. Like, look at that. Like, can you know, soon you're going to be looking at that and you're going to say everybody about someone's life. You're going to see that they have that their boyfriend has drug issues. You're going to see that their third kid is driving them nuts. You can see that they like have they whatever their addictions are coming out, like it's yeah. So the payoff starts coming after chapter 8. Oh, yay! All right. I'm ending the meeting. Namaskar.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.